Welcome to the Survivors Podcast. This series sheds light on the previously untold experiences of Tasmanian women and children who have escaped domestic violence and abuse, finding refuge and support at Gyra House. The first-hand accounts of resilience, healing, and self-discovery shared within these episodes are a must-listen and incredibly powerful. If you find anything triggering within these podcasts, please know that help is available 24/7, 7 days a week, 1-800-RESPECT. I'm Esther Nichols, your host, and we are recording from one of the 16 safe houses Gyra House now has across southern Tasmania. Isabella, thank you for joining us. What made you want to speak out?
Well, I think it's because I appreciate everything that Gyra House has done for myself and my family. We came to Hobart not knowing anyone, not knowing what the landscape was like. We just got on a plane and came here. We were here for about 2 weeks just staying in short-term accommodation, didn't know what to do, and I finally was brave enough to call the family violence hotline. And they put us in touch, thankfully, with Gyra House that same day, and they just welcomed us with open arms. I felt finally for the first time in a very long time that a weight was finally off my shoulders and someone else was sharing that with me. And that's what I felt Gyra did for us. They supported us from the very moment that we stepped in this door, and even after we had left, they were still there for us, just like a friendship for us.
So you fled from interstate mm-hmm. to get away.
Yes. So that would have been 12 years ago.
Yeah.
My children, my mother and myself left.
And how old were your children at the time?
They would have been 10 and 12 at that time. Yeah. Only young kids.
What was their situation, if you feel comfortable talking about it, that led you to flee? What was life like for you before coming to Tassie, before fleeing that situation?
Sure. So I was in a relationship with my children's father for a little bit over 13 years. And in that time there was, you know, domestic violence. He was very controlling of a lot of things in our lives. There was physical abuse, financial abuse. I mean, he just controlled everything that we did. And there were a few times over the years that I did try to get away from him, and it just got a little bit harder each time that we tried to still have a relationship with him for our children, but in a way that it was safe for myself and the children. And it just never eventuated like that. So finally a friend of mine saw the struggles that I was going through, because I was so embarrassed. I mean, it was a shameful thing. I never wanted to admit that I was in a relationship with my children's father, and it was violent. And it was, I guess it's a little bit like a stigma, isn't it? You know, people look down on you, I guess. That's the way I felt at that time. And it was a silly thing to think, because people are there to help you. But a friend finally said to me, look, you're in a situation. It's not safe. I think you need to speak to someone. So we got in touch with domestic violence counsellors up there, and the counsellor used to try and reach me every afternoon to make sure that I was safe, because she was so worried about what was going to happen, that she had to do that just to see that we're okay. And she said, you need to get away, because he's going to end up, you know, doing something. So we've managed to get a plan in place where I would be able to get away with the children in a safe way. And that was him going into jail, because he'd done something else wrong, and I knew how long he was going to be gone for. the judge gave him 3 months, and so I thought in that time I can pack all that stuff up, I can get rid of what we need to, and I can get away safely. And then while he was still in jail and I knew that he was coming out within the next week, I sent him a letter and I just said, look, when you come out, the children and I are not going to be here. And we managed to leave Brisbane. We went somewhere else, stayed there for a few months. We ended up going somewhere else again to another, you know.
Was that because he would find you?
Yes, because wow. he would not give up. He always said that he would always look for us if I ever left. And he did. He drove around and he went up north Queensland. He went to Perth. He went, you know, he did. He looked for us. So thankfully we managed to stay hidden, and then we came down here, and it was just after all that running, after living in places where they were never permanent places, they were only just short-term accommodation, we finally managed to come down here, and it was, yeah, like I said, it was just like a weight lifted off my shoulders for the first time in a very, very long time.
And obviously at two kids, 10 and 12 at that time, they'd be very aware of what's happening or what's going on. That must be such a weight to bear as well. How did you cope throughout that time?
With my children, I was always very open with them about, I tried to shield them from as much as I could, but they weren't silly. They knew what was happening. And so when the time came for us to make that choice of leaving Brisbane, and I said to them, look, if we're going to leave, we're going to have to cut off all contact. You're not going to be in the same school. You're not going to have the same friends. I'll not be in my job that I've been in for a long time. But these are the things that we have to do if we want to feel safe. And I said, it's up to you. Like, we're going to make that choice together. Because I wanted them to also have a choice in the matter, not just be drawn away from everything they knew. And they would rather have been safe and try and be happy than to live like we were living every single day. It was, you know, you have someone walk in the door of an afternoon and you don't know what sort of mood they're going to be in. Are they going to be violent this time? Are they going to be drinking? So we made that choice together. Even the first few years after we'd been here, it was just so, you were still looking over your shoulder, you're still so worried about things that may happen, that he may still find us, you know, things like that. And then finally, I think for the first time, you feel like you can breathe again. You feel like you don't have to worry about him finding you. And even if he did, I don't know, I don't think I'd be scared of him now. I think I feel finally the strongest I have in a very long time. Anyone going through this, I don't think you can make it on your own. You need support, whether it's from friends or family, but I think you need specialised support, people that understand exactly what you're going through, because they've seen it through so many women who've been through it before. They know what they can do to help you. And, yeah, I don't think there's no way that we could have done it without Jara.
When you leave a relationship, anyone that's listening to this or knows as a friend or family member that is thinking of leaving, what are the most important steps to do so safely?
To do so safely, I mean, make sure that you have things in place. I know it's hard to have that support behind you, but maybe if you've got friends or family support or an organisation that's able to be there for when you're ready to leave and get out, that's amazing. The other thing is, when you do leave, I tried, I don't know how many times, to be able to get out of the relationship safely, and that was by keeping lines of communication open with him. You can't. With a person like that, they will manipulate you, they will do whatever they can to keep you in a relationship with them. So finally, at the end, the only way for me to, for me and my family to escape him was to have zero contact, no communication at all. That means cutting ties with a lot of family or friends that you may have. We're not talking about that being forever. It's just for a short period of time until you are able to hopefully get back on your feet. But if you keep in contact with the abuser, you're not going to be able to get out. That's just what I've found.
And I think that's supported by a lot of research and studies into going no contact because you are vulnerable mentally and physically to their manipulation.
Oh, for sure.
And it's interesting just what you said about also having to cut off some family and friends because they can also manipulate your family and friends.
They can.
Into getting information about you.
So when we left Brisbane, a few of my friends knew what was happening. The problem was it left them open to, you know, they were scared of him as well. So anytime he'd come over and he'd ask them questions, they knew what was going on to a certain extent. You know, I was worried for their safety. They were worried for their own safety. So if they knew a lot more of what was going on, that would have not been such a good thing for them. So I think if you just cut off any contact that you can, and maybe that's the best way to keep safe, is just not having that contact.
You mentioned how you fled with your mum as well.
Yes. It was difficult. I mean, my mum was living with us at the time and it was hard for her because she had to leave everything that she knew as well, but she also knew that this was the only way for us to be able to get away safely, and she was always supportive. It was difficult because when we came down here it was totally different to anywhere else that we'd ever been. So she'd come from a tropical country and then coming to you know, Tassie where it's really cold. Yeah, it was a bit hard, but she was always supportive of us. But I could never have left her there with him being around.
And Lynette, if I could just bring you in here, you're the Gyra House manager, and just going back to something Isabella was saying before about her feeling the shame and the guilt and the embarrassment, even though it wasn't her that should be ashamed.
Oh, it's very common, and that's one of the things we try to help the women with, and to try and help them heal and to make them, when they come here, we want them to feel valued and to feel that they can achieve and that they can make a new life for themselves.
On the previous podcast, we had one of the founders of Gyra House, Nell.
Yes.
And she spoke about children a few decades ago weren't even counted in the numbers of domestic abuse survivors. They were just not even given a number.
And there's a real lack of counselling for children, domestic violence counselling, you know, kids who have been traumatised. So there's a real shortfall there in counsellors that we can access for the children. So that's a real spot that needs to be filled, really. And we've always, you know, sort of got our ear to the ground about that. And it'd be wonderful if we could have funding to employ a counsellor.
Yeah, and that surprises me that you've constantly got to be trying to cover costs and the rising costs of even just living at the moment, but then you just want to counsel. Like, it just surprises me that with everything we know, why would we not want to intervene in these kids' lives before it spirals to something that could be avoided?
Well, that's right. And in the last few years, the children have been counted as clients, which they never were before. So they're clients now, but they need to be provided for as well. It's no good just calling them clients and, you know, counting them as an unassisted number, you know, when their mums apply for accommodation. So that's something that we're really looking at, that children really need to have that trauma counselling, especially, you know, the younger children. They've really experienced a lot of trauma and abuse. They've witnessed so many awful things, and they are traumatised. They're abused just through experiencing, or they may be physically abused and they're probably emotionally abused as well. So, yeah, the relationship with the mums can be really quite difficult for the mums to navigate.
You still carry a certain amount of guilt because you, I guess you feel like you let your children down in some way, whether it was through no fault of your own, you still always feel a guilt. I guess because you don't give one, you don't give them that family unit that a lot of other families have. You've torn them away from everything they know, and they don't see their father, and they don't, you know, there's lots of reasons why you feel that guilt. And any mother who goes through this, I mean, they have an incredible strength in them. They do. I think it's just been pushed down so much. They've forgotten just what strength they have in them. It's just a matter of finding that again, and I think you do. You will eventually find that. Yeah, it just comes with a bit of help.
Isabella, something that a lot of survivors have said is that it's difficult when they try to explain to friends and family why they stayed, whereas I believe it should be why did they do that, not why did you stay. But did you encounter that?
It becomes normal. It's your normal way of living. I mean, for me, I think that's why I stayed with the person for so long, was because if I knew where he was, mm-hmm. I felt safe, and it was normal after a while. And it's not until you get out that you realise you're not living. You're just constantly walking on eggshells. You're living under someone else's rules, and you never have that space to breathe and be yourself. I mean, it just takes such a long time to realise that, but you do. You need to be able to find yourself again. And I think for us getting away, that was finally, after so many years, I found myself. I feel happy and comfortable. And
we still have shocking statistics of women that have lost their lives to domestic violence, and we've seen that, the protests and marches most recently over that.
Yeah. I can't believe that in this day and age, after so long, that these things are still happening, that there's nothing in place to be able to stop these men from committing these violent acts, and women having to live in fear constantly. I mean, I think it's doubled in the last, you know, compared to what it was last year, the amount of women that have been killed. You know, it's shocking to me. It's like a pandemic almost, you know, like it's ridiculous how many people are being hurt. There has to be something where women are able to live safely in their homes without being worried about being killed and their children hurt, and some it angers me still, you know.
Rightly so. And it should anger everyone, whether they've been through it or not. What's your message to government or organisations, people in power, the policymakers?
I know that they've got AVOs or DVOs in place, you know. They're a piece of paper. If someone wants to get to you, they will do whatever they can to do that. They're not going to be worried about a piece of paper. I know my ex was never worried about that piece of paper. You need to be able to provide these women with options where they're going to feel safe, where they're able to get away from him without being in fear of being found. I know that they're talking about providing funds for women to be able to get away. It's a great help, but it's really, money sometimes isn't enough for someone to be able to do that safely. You need places where women are able to go without being told, "I'm sorry, but we don't have any space for you at the moment."
Problem facing Jara House at the moment, turning away so many women and children.
Yeah.
And that must just break your heart too.
Oh, it does, yeah. Because when a woman's ready to go, that has taken all her strength to be able to say, right, I'm ready, I want to get out of this. And then to be met with locked doors that you can't, "I'm sorry, but we can't help you at the moment, you're going to have to try elsewhere." And then what happens? You end up having to go back to the abuser and having to stay in the same situation and then go through the same things again and again. And you don't know if you're going to be able to wake up the next morning, or you don't know whether, you know, you're scared for your life continuously. You are. I think there has to be more put in place than just saying, well, there's, you know, there's a bit of money for you to be able to find a way for you to be able to get out. No, you need those organisations there to be able to back you up and help you.
Right? Lynette, it must be heart-wrenching to have to turn away women and children.
Well, it is. It's very sad, and it's really difficult for the staff who take the calls, because there's probably, I think, 60 women a month that we turn away. And
just at Gyra House?
Just at Gyra House, yes.
60 women a month?
Yeah, that would be. And about 50 or 70 children. Yeah, 50 to 70 children. Depends how many children they've got.
Shocking. Unacceptable.
It is. It is. It's very sad. Yeah.
But as you were saying, Lynette, this is why we need more funding, more assistance when it comes to helping the mothers and the women, but also helping these kids.
Absolutely, yes, we do. Yeah. We'd love to be able to employ or have a contracted child counsellor for Gyra House for the children, so it'd just be wonderful for the children, but also for the mums to have their children counselled.
Isabella, what is your life like now?
After 12 years, I finally started trying dating again.
Oh.
And I've met a lovely man, so nothing like I ever had in the past. He's wonderful. So I was very, very blessed. My children are happy. I mean, don't get me wrong, when you go through trauma, there's always, unfortunately, there are lasting effects to it, you know, no matter what age they are. But they are happy, they're healthy, they've formed good relationships in their lives now, they're working, they're providing for themselves, and that's all more than I could have ever asked for. Yeah, very proud.
Thank you both so much for joining us. And if you would like more podcasts, you'll find them on the website gyrahouse.org.au. And that is also where, if you are in a position where you're able to, you can make a donation or find out about how you can access the services of Gyra House, or even just by sharing this story, it helps a lot. Until next time, thanks for listening.